Good morning, Tucson, Arizona. Welcome to the Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Excited to be here with you, as always, on this Wednesday, December 2nd. It is a bit chilly out there in the old Pueblo, and I drive to
just
work.
Just a bit.
Bit of frost on the windows, you know? Like, I can't believe that it's already December, quite frankly, that we're nearing the absolute end of 2025, and what a year it was. What a blackout Wednesday it was last week.
Do tell, Grant.
So this was the busiest day we ever had in the history of Union Public House in 15 years. Like, this was it. Of all the blackout Wednesdays, like, it was an absolute mob. And it was great to see. The Maverick had a banger day. Union had a banger day. If you were a bar in some capacity, you were absolutely rocking. And it was great to see, especially after all the concerns this year, things are down, people aren't drinking as much, right? Like, maybe the way we handle alcohol or bars is different with our social culture today versus maybe 5 or 10 or 15 years ago. And if you saw the crowd at Blackout Wednesday, you would say, no, there is absolutely a demand for this product right now. Like, this is still a pretty happening place and quite frankly, a real day to celebrate. And hopefully everyone had a great Thanksgiving as well, too. I got to see the Lions be the turkeys again on Thanksgiving, laying a giant egg on our Thanksgiving. And then, of course, we got this week, I got the top of the news out here. We got to watch the Arizona Wildcats this weekend absolutely dismantle Arizona State in the Territorial Cup, winning 23-7 and taking our team to 9-3, which I'm incredibly excited about, man. I think that this is just great for the program. What an amazing turnaround.
Can you believe it? I mean, who would have, if anybody had told you, had if you'd have suggested to a sports pundit early in the season or preseason, I predict 9-3, they'd say you're nuts. And look what happened.
So, without a doubt, a great turnaround.
A plucky team. I like them.
Without a doubt. I mean, one really double overtime loss away from BYU to be even been playing in the Big 12 championship game. And I think that exceeded a lot of expectations. And that's great for Coach Brennan. It's great for Tucson because I think, last year we didn't even exceed our expectations. We didn't even achieve those. And so to overachieve this year kind of helps cancel out some of that ill will. And I think at this point, I think you're going to see the city of Tucson all in on Brent Brennan as our coach. And hopefully next year we can fill that stadium a little more. All in also includes participating and showing up to the games.
I tell you, man, those young men and that coaching staff worked their tails off. And, they put in the hard work and the discipline and they reap the rewards.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
Well, bowl games aside, because we're going to get to some sort of bowl game over here for the University of Arizona, we've also got one going on in the Old Pueblo. We're going to have 10 years of the Arizona Bowl, right? We're going to get the Mountain West team against the MAC team playing against each other, and that selection Sunday is going to happen this Sunday in St. Philip's Plaza. We're going to have the crew from the Arizona Bowl as a watch party, and we're going to get to see which bowl games are selected for that bowl, which is on Saturday, the 27th of December. So do get out there. Do support the Arizona Bowl. Buy yourself tickets for that one. We're going to find out which teams are playing in our home field here in Tucson, Arizona, and we're going to figure out which bowl game the Arizona Wildcats go to. Both of those on a college football selection Sunday coming up. We'll have that at 1 p.m. at St. Phil's Plaza. You can, of course, watch that on TV from the comfort of your own home as well, too. But if you want to celebrate with me and some of my friends and some of the great people of the Arizona Bowl, come out and support that one, because that Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl is an important economic driver for our town. And it's great to see us actually have a bowl game back in Southern Arizona. I remember the Copper Bowl days back in the 1990s, and it was a real bummer to lose that one. And if we don't go out and support this, it could go the way of other professional sports that have, quite frankly, left the building.
Sure. It winds up at a baseball field in Phoenix or something. So, yeah. And that's no good.
No, and they've got a lot of stadiums up there. Yeah. So we've got to go out and do our best to support that one. It looks like there's going to be a halftime show. Tonio Armani from Death Row Records is going to play at that particular game, I believe, at halftime. Don't quote me on that one. I can't remember if it's before or halftime, but I know we're going to have a concert as part of that game as well, too. So go on out there and support the Arizona Bowl. And other Tucson news, after a long 4-week wait, the three new city councils council members were sworn in yesterday, right? Mayor Indeed. Gave a statement about that one. And so Miranda Schubert and Selena Barajas and Kevin Dahl were all sworn in. So we've got two new city council members, the largest number of women we've ever had on the city council as well in Tucson. And the mayor gave a long speech about supporting the RTA next ballot proposition mm-hmm. that's going to be coming up on March 10th. Kind of interesting. The paper had to dance around her talking in support of this. There are some state rules against electioneering and actually using the city of Tucson functions to pitch a ballot proposition, even one that I'm for. It was interesting to watch the papers this morning have to dance around her comments. She said positive things about it, making sure not to violate state rules about electioneering. And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Violating the letter, but maybe not the intent of the state of the court rulings.
Without a doubt. But new city council, not a huge surprise. Of course, we knew the results of that election, but they got sworn in about 4 weeks after the election. So we've got new city council people, and Karen Ulick and Roque Perez are on their way out, having served for the city. Both Karen stepped in a couple of years ago, and Roque came in about 6 months ago or so, just to cover for a while when Richard Fimbres retired and picked up the slack. And he immediately announced that he'll be running for state house in LD20 as a Democrat. And so his political career is certainly not
over. So he didn't do any electioneering from the podium either?
0% at a city meeting. None.
Leonard Spirit. Yeah, okay, whatever.
Obviously, big on the news, Amazon leaving Project Blue. I want to cover that in a little bit more in hour two, because I think that's a big topic that quite frankly, could devote an entire show to that one, you know, of just saga continuing. But Jeff Bezos saying, I'm not in with Beale Infrastructure. We're not going to do Project Blue as Amazon. But as you know, Matt, and hopefully our listeners understand, that doesn't mean that Project Blue isn't happening.
Still going.
This is still going on over there. We're most likely just going to have Zuckerberg and Meta behind the scenes on this one, quite frankly. And so Amazon and Amazon AWS, Amazon Web Services may be out. Facebook and Meta may be in. At the end of the day, the monster that is Project Blue rolls on in spite of city and county opposition.
Who knows, Grant? Tucson could become a Temu town. I mean, you know.
Right? Or Wish.com. I have so many disappointments.
Posh.com.
I bought Poshmark. I think that's Poshmark, the Attorney General, and selling of diamond necklaces that erroneously appear in the mail if you happen to be an Attorney General appointed worker over there as well, too. That was a bit of a problem. Something that I did find interesting on Arizona law this week that really stuck to my heart was Friday, the Arizona Supreme Court had a ruling that it was probable cause to pull you over if you continue to hog the left lane of the freeway system and not move over for incoming traffic. There had been a case in Pinal County where a drug trafficker was traveling northbound, or I guess I will call it westbound on I-10 towards Phoenix.
Very accurate.
Thank you. And was pulled over because when the cop went behind this particular vehicle, they were in the left lane and they slowed down to 70 miles an hour and then just proceeded to stay 70 miles an hour in the quote unquote fast lane. Now, forgetting the drug charges here on this one that we'll get into in a minute, this is a personal pet peeve of mine. People hanging out in the fast lane and blocking it, particularly on a two-lane highway, is a real societal problem. Of all the things you see me fight for, whether it's the egg thing, whether it's a minimum wage clause, whether it was the COVID restrictions, I will stand behind prosecution of those standing and going too slow in the left lane and take it to the fullest extent of the law. And so in this particular case, this individual stayed at 70 miles an hour. And the police said, well, that's probable cause to pull them over. The drug-sniffing dog, of course, found 55 pounds of weed and a bunch of meth and other things in the car. And this person was promptly arrested. And they sued. And the appellate courts basically had come out and said, well, we actually agree with the individual that this isn't enough probable cause to pull somebody over. Yeah. And they threw out even the drug charges. You had to kind of throw out the baby with the bathwater. Yeah. On Friday, the Supreme Court overturned that ruling, saying that if you just go slow in the fast lane like that, at some point the police can pull you over for that and then use their better judgment to have some probable cause to search the car. Yeah. And so I think the punishment fits the crime over here. This is a crime that could actually be worse. And so I am very excited to see that driving too slow in the fast lane is not maybe a crime now in Arizona, but it is reason to pull you over. So get the heck out of the way. Use those blinkers. Clear a little bit of path on that two-lane road up to Phoenix for everybody over here. It's kind of a big deal. And I thought that was pretty interesting to pop up on the news over here this
week. Setting aside a Seinfeld level, you know, irritant or complaint, which is fine. I mean, we all have them. And I agree with, by the way, I'm on Team Grant on this one. You know, move over and let faster traffic. It is a 75 mile an hour stretch of road, I think. So going 70 in the middle lane kind of invites attention, invites like, whoa, why would they be doing this? You know? So yeah, that's an interesting case.
Correct. And the police also, just interestingly, on a side note for that one, said that because that person was driving between a 2002 and 2008 Chevy Malibu, that was probable cause as well, too, because these are the noted drug mule cars that transport drugs from southern Arizona to the rest of the country, where I assume it's more profitable. So I'm really sorry for those 2002 to 2008 Chevy Malibu drivers.
You're automatically flagged.
Yeah, the Pinal County Sheriff's Department is looking for you as well, too. Maybe the Malibu just couldn't go faster than 70 miles an hour. I don't know.
Who knows?
Yeah, I just don't know all those specifics. But kudos to the Arizona Supreme Court for that particular decision. Why don't we take a quick break over here for some great local sponsors that help make radio like this possible. When we come back, we're going to have the partner in the Stage Left Bar, a brand new bar on East Congress Avenue, just opened up. Mr. Anthony Papps is going to be coming up talking about running a business in the city of Tucson when we come back after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Grant Kruger. And you know, I love local small businesses. One of the things we always like to talk about over here is economic development inside of both Pima County, or even more interesting, inside the city of Tucson. And I couldn't think of anything almost more interesting happening in the city of Tucson than economic development downtown, right at the heart of downtown. And somebody that I'm lucky enough to be sitting across from right now is participating in that. I've got the partner or owner of the brand new Stage Left Bar, immediately adjacent to the Rialto Theater, Mr. Anthony Pabst.
Hey, Grant. It's good to be here.
Good morning. Excited to have you here on The Morning Voice. Anthony, why don't you break down your career arc a little bit for our listeners that don't know who and what you are, because you got a great story. You've worked in still work in the liquor rep side of things as well, too. Mm-hmm. So you've got a lot of experience in alcohol distribution in the state of Arizona, my friend.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Just a little about me. I am born and bred Tucson, Arizona. I went to elementary school at Sam Hughes, middle school at Mansfield, Tucson at Tucson High, the University of Arizona, and then immediately moved to New York City as soon as I graduated.
Which unfortunately happens a lot here. This is the exact kind of thing I'm like trying to prevent, trying to figure out ways to keep our best and brightest here in the old Pueblo, making things happen. So why New York City?
Well, New York City had at the time, this was 2007. It was in the middle of, obviously, there's a tumultuous economic kind of hurricane starting to brew. And it just so happened I graduated from the U of A, got a degree in economics. And when I got out there, I used that to get into banking, which all through the University of Arizona the whole time, I spent my whole time in hospitality. I worked at the Grill at Hacienda Del Sol. And that's really where I cut my teeth to get into the restaurant industry and learn about liquor, which it turned out would really help me later on in life.
Sure, the Grill's got probably the best wine list in Tucson, right? I mean, I don't think there is a more extensive or expensive wine list in the entire city.
I totally agree. But also, back then, the book was probably twice as thick as it is now. Now, don't get me wrong. It's beautifully curated. The guys up there right now, they do a great job. But back then, they were trying to make a statement. So the book itself was like an inch thick. And I mean, it had... we had thousands of SKUs of wine. It was unbelievable. And so we tried to maintain that. But when I moved to New York City, I wanted to get into what I thought would be my dream job, especially coming from, economics. I was super excited to get into banking. Hated it. Totally soulless. I actually did pretty well in it because literally coming from the old Pueblo, it's like we're very, not to toot our own horn, but we're nice people. we like to think of others. We like to have a good time. And out in New York, when everybody is hustle and bustle, if you finally meet somebody that was cool, it was like, you really had a good time and really got to excel in whatever you were doing. And so I did banking. Again, it was soulless. It wasn't my thing. Then I got into hospitality out there and ended up running a restaurant group out there called the Eno Group, which has since been sold off. Mario Batali ended up buying the group. And it was then one of my best friends, Nick Kreutz, who's the current owner of Locale, Contigo, Miramonte. Shout out to Miramonte. They just opened on Speedway.
Right. And Nick was the general manager at Hacienda at one point too, right?
Yeah, I was his assistant GM. So he called me. He was working for then the distribution company. It's called Young's Market, which has then since become RNDC, Republic National Distribution Company. And he said, I need somebody to help sell Proximo, which is the parent company for Jose Cuervo. He needed to bring on another sales guy. Heard that our company had just sold. He's like, you want to move back to Tucson? We said, sure, let's do it. Move back to Tucson. That's actually how I got in the liquor business. It was from A, knowing somebody, and B, having come through the restaurant industry, et cetera, and having, like, it's good to have New York City restaurants kind of in your back pocket.
Without a doubt. Now, most of our listeners probably don't understand the alcohol distribution in the state of Arizona and how there are three tiers to this, right? There's the producing side of things. They think you're distillers, you're brewers. There's the distribution side of things. These are the trucks and the people that deliver that product to you, buying it from the distillers and the brewers. And then there's consumption on and off premise. On is like what we do in our restaurants. Off premise is think Circle K or Costco or something like that. And no restaurant can go out and buy their beer, wine, or distilled spirits from somebody else on that third tier. Like, so think again, Circle K, Costco, Total Wine, BevMo, all of these things. Like, we pretty much have to buy from these distributors, and that's who you worked for.
Exactly. So when I first started, I was working for what was then Young's Market, which later became Republic National. I then worked for Southern Wine Spirits for 10 years. Actually, I was there for a long time. I ended up being Arizona on-premise director for Bacardi USA and Heaven Hill Products. And during my tenure there, it was interesting because, again, these are the jobs that nobody really knows kind of exists. Most people think, like, even when you walk into from the off-premise of the grocery store to the on-premise, when you're walking into a bar or restaurant, they don't realize the travel that the bottle of liquor had to take to get on that back bar, to get on that shelf, to get eye level with you in the store. It takes not only like relationships and knowing the people in the bars, like when you walk into your favorite bar, say walk into my favorite bar, Union, and I'm like, you know what? I go in there and I see all the options and there's a million on the back bar, but that was chosen and curated by yourself and your people. Shout out to Andy. Love you, buddy. excuse me. And he curated all that, but at the same time, on the back end of that, he had to have people, representatives from each individual company and each individual distributorship that sells this alcohol. They had to come in and they had to speak to him about how each one was distilled, how each one was finished, how each one tastes, taste them on each one, and then really figure out and curate what the back bars will look like and all that stuff. And all that takes... before the first menu is written or anything like that, you have to do all that legwork to get it just on the back bar for customers to walk in and be like, oh, hey, they have this, that, and the other thing. Man, it took so many more steps than it didn't just show up there.
Sure, we've got to distill our list, pun intended perhaps over here, down from thousands of SKUs to the hundreds that can, or scores perhaps, that can fit on your back bar. There just becomes a certain amount of space that you can have or not have. And if you have too many SKUs, quite frankly, it just becomes a dusty library of liquors and they don't turn or sell. And that's not necessarily an advantage either. Just being there, out of sight, buried beneath the bar, it's somewhere where the customer can't see it. Mm-hmm. That product is absolutely never going to sell.
No, absolutely not. Not to mention, you take every trend. I mean, recently, the biggest thing, especially in the liquor industry, is like all of a sudden you'll be running out of something from the distributor side and be like, why? Like, why is all the Hypnotic gone? Who's buying all of this specific thing? And then it turns out it's like a TikTok thing. Like somebody on TikTok made one little video and all of a sudden you can't buy brandy anymore because they figured out to put it in something and made a viral video. Like it's wild. It's no longer just marketing. Like it's no longer Bud Light just at the Super Bowl, and that's what they're going to push or something like that. It's like all these little microcosms of advertisement, getting people into things is really what's driving a lot of these like businesses. And you're seeing entire liquor labels like rise and fall on the word of somebody on TikTok, or it's wild.
Well, and it's interesting to see where the placement of liquor and liquor advertising goes. At the top of the hour, we were talking about the Snoop Dogg, you know, by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop, Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl over here. And that particular product is now sponsoring a college bowl game. If you would have told me 20 years ago that the sponsor of a college bowl game would be a distilled spirit in some cases, I would say there's no way they would make that possible. And yet here we are today in 2025, and it seems to be happening.
No, it's unreal. Yeah, and especially in the college scene. And then I've taken, like, I'm a big race fan, for instance, and you've seen kind of like racing, like they didn't want to put alcohol sponsors on the cars anymore. A lot of different things.
Alcohol and cars don't go together? What are you saying over here?
But that's exactly right. But now you're seeing it at the College Bowl? It's like, okay, I think half the people enrolled there can't drink, but that's fine.
Without a doubt. Well, why don't we take a break over here, Anthony, and we come back, we're going to talk about your transition from being a liquor rep into being a bar owner in one of the coolest locations in downtown Tucson, right next to the Rialto. We're going to have a fascinating discussion with Anthony Papps from the new Stage Left Bar, immediately adjacent to the Rialto Theater. Don't go anywhere. More with Grant and Anthony coming up after the break. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Every Wednesday morning, 7 to 9 a.m., you get me on The Morning Voice, a little food for thought, right? I bring you local economic development, restaurants, and bar news, just a hint of politics mixed in there as well, too. On Mondays, you've got Lydia Aranda. On Tuesdays, Ted Maxwell from the Southern Arizona Leadership Council. Following me up on Thursdays is Tom Moulton from the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. And on Fridays, Dr. Ed Ackerley bringing you wonders from the University of Arizona. We are The Morning Voice. We're lucky enough to be joined for another segment by Mr. Anthony Papps. Anthony had been a liquor, you know, working liquor supplier and distributorship side, but is now a partner in a brand new bar that has opened up downtown. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Anthony?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So our new place is called Stage Left. It is directly to the right of the Rialto. We share a wall with it, but if you're standing on the stage of the Rialto, we are literally stage left of the Rialto. It's small, just we can fit about 60 people, but that, you know, we wanted to put a nice, almost neighborhood style bar in the middle of Congress. We wanted to do something where people could just come and hang out and hide for a minute and then go off to all the different businesses around, which is really cool. We're open every day from 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. And yeah, we just kind of open the doors quietly. Actually, our grand opening is going to be this Saturday. We open at 4, but I think festivities start at 6. And we wanted to do something a little bit towards, again, you're so close to the Rialto. It's so hard not to do, like, honor the heritage of everybody that's come through Tucson and all the different artists and all the different, even like comedy shows, things like that have come through. So when you walk into our place, the first thing you'll notice is all over the walls is actual vintage posters that are the real posters from the Rialto. Most of them are even signed that the Rialto partnered with us to put up on the wall and kind of show off, kind of honoring the area, the heritage of the place. And yeah, we're very lucky. I'm very lucky to be a part of it. It's not just me. It's also my partners, Billy Elliott from Elliott's, which is right down the street on Congress, and Brennan Scott, who's formerly of Boxyard. He currently owns John Henry's. He currently owns Trackside. He's a little bit everywhere. Great people. So I'm very fortunate to be part of that little team of people to take over the bar and, you know, try to do something good and add to the community.
This is a cool location, Anthony. For those that don't know, this is 316 East Congress. It was formerly known as the Good Oak Bar for the last decade. What differences in the bar do you think you're going to have at Stage Left compared to what they were doing at the Good Oak Bar?
Yeah, so the Good Oak Bar was awesome while it was there. I was a big fan of it. We're just doing a little different route to market. The Good Oak Bar had a really great idea of, like, you know, they tried to do craft cocktails, tried to be like swanky, almost like a I remember one of the other bar managers saying they tried to do like a New York kind of vibe thing in there. And I thought it worked. I thought it was great. But, you know, after 10 years and just kind of moving things around, you know, businesses come and go. It's the way it is. So we're very lucky to have the spot. And in that spot, you know, we love the idea of where you could have regulars come in and just kind of hang out and chill for a little bit. And that was kind of built into when we were thinking about this idea. But realistically, what we're thinking is, you know, when you're going up and down Congress and you're going to a show and you want to make it to dinner, like a lot of people want to just do like maybe a shot and a beer and get out of the way. You know, they want to do just like a glass of wine for happy hour or something like that and then go on to the next thing. Because realistically, that part of Congress is a lot of transient, as in you're just going from right to left a lot of the time. If you're not going to a show or you're not going to Congress, you're walking right by, going to all the different things that Congress has had to offer. And, you know, it's no secret in the last 10 to 15 years, Congress has really blown up and became like a really cool place for Tucsonans. And I'm super proud to have people come from out of town and be like, hey, let's go downtown Tucson. If you were here 10 years ago, you ain't gonna recognize it. There's a lot of cool stuff going on.
Without a doubt. And in a weird twist of fate, because we worked together, you and I, both mm-hmm. as me as the operator and you on the distributor side for many years with, mm-hmm. with Southern and with Young's Market. But now, like, we're going to be neighbors down there, like, on Congress as well, too, because you're going to be directly across from our new Block A development that's going on in the former Hi-Fi Kitchen and Cocktail Space.
Absolutely. And by the way, congratulations is definitely in order for you. What a cool spot. Your idea for what's going to go down on Block A, the way there's going to be like big, like things that you simply cannot replicate at home or anywhere else. I'm super excited to see Block A open. And also, it's yet another business that we can have downtown that brings in more people and facilitates having more revenue across the board. I mean, the day Hi-Fi closed down, we were speaking earlier, I mean, literally, there was like a 20% drop in revenue in a bunch of the bars and restaurants down there just because that block had nothing there. And then all of a sudden, people aren't necessarily taking the stroll underneath that Fourth Avenue Bridge to kind of see what's going on in Congress. It's so funny that from block to block and from place to place, anywhere, like they always say in real estate, location, 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 how every little bit counts and every little bit matters. So I'm super excited to see Block A open, have that corner revitalized, be partners. And really, I mean, a rising tide floats all boats.
Without a doubt. I mean, part of Congress's success has always been the quote-unquote bar hopping, right? You're maybe not going down specifically to go to Highwire or specifically to go to Congress or specifically to go to Cobra. But instead, it's like, I'm taking an Uber. I've got down here with my friends. Let's go to this bar and go check it out. And then you go, well, I'm looking for a different point of view. Let's walk. Because at this point, within walking distance, you've got quite the myriad of choices out there. And so there's a lot of foot traffic of people kind of bar hopping from place to place. And I think bringing back and revitalizing that east side of Congress with both Stage Left, with Block A, with whatever comes into the Funky Monk or not, right? The revitalization of that area will put that east side of Congress back on the map and have walkers making that trek across the street and continuing that jaunt of the, let's call it 5 or 6 blocks that really are ground zero of downtown, right?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And I mean, being a former college student here, and you know, 20 years ago, again, we would go down Fourth Avenue. Well, we go down to university, go down to Fourth Avenue all the time, and that's really, I think, Honor Roll was the only thing open really late back then. And as things popped up, and as all the different restaurants and bars, Elliott's has been there for 13 years now, I want to say, and just being a part of that and keeping it not alive, but keeping it vibrant, really, you know, and just adding new things into the mix. I think it creates a new place for Tucsonans to go. Sure, they're all going downtown, but it's great to see a new bar. It's great to see a new restaurant. I am wildly guilty of going to every bar and restaurant in this town just because that's what I love to do. It's like it's a passion of mine. I love to see what people bring to the table, the different cocktails, the food. I mean, it's hard to get me out of Tacos Epson on the south side on a Sunday. You know, I mean, I'm
Understood. But food is such an important component to this, and it's gotten more and more expensive, of course, mm-hmm. to provide. One of the things that we're hoping to bring to the table downtown, literally and proverbially here, is late night food, right? To be able to have a full service kitchen open till at least midnight downtown. There aren't that many places in Tucson these days you can go after 9 p.m. or, God forbid, 10 p.m. And go get like a meal that doesn't come out of a drive-through, a counter service type place. Like, where can you go get a waitress serviced meal after 10 p.m. that isn't necessarily a diner in some capacity?
That's great. That is absolutely true. And that sucks too, because it's hard to eat good after 10 p.m. because either you're eating, you know, you can't eat pizza every day.
I've tried actually. Let me get. I'm gonna have to take a counter to that argument. I have succeeded in that goal on more than one occasion.
Well, I will say this though. So one interesting thing about Stage Left is we're in a building that also houses Jaime's Pizza Kitchen. You can get Jaime's Pizza's food over into Stage Left. They'll bring it over to you. So we do have food offerings. We're obviously not a restaurant. We are like your classic bar. But you can still bring food into the bar, which is great. And late night, I've told people like, oh my God, you got to go to this awesome hot dog stand and come back. You know, they come back with their classic Sonoran dogs and eat at the bar at like 1 o'clock in the morning. We try to welcome everybody in, which is cool.
I love that collab with Jaime's. We've had Gabriel Moreno on this show before as well, too, about 6 months ago or so. There's quite a bit of redevelopment that's going to happen on that stretch of building as well, too, right? It looks like the old proper space may end up with some component of food service coming back there.
Yeah, so it looks like the old proper space. I know that they wanted to bring in something. Ownership was going to try to bring in something that wasn't going to be food and restaurant. They're trying to do something interesting. I'm not sure how that's going. You know, hopefully that works out well. But I do love that spot, man. That's such a cool little corner right there. And I think whatever goes in there is going to be great. But yeah, I know that. I don't know if it's working out or not, but I will say this, especially when it comes to that whole Rialto area. There is a patio, which some people may remember. They did a Martin Drug Co. out there. It was
during a playground remodel.
Right. Yep. And it sounds like what's going on is they're going to put like a cap on it, like put something over it. That way it's like open all the time. They definitely want to actually use that whole space now, not just be like an empty patio anymore. I've heard ideas going all the way out to redoing Scrappies. So that way like the whole block has something new going on.
Yeah,
so,
I think it's going to be really interesting to see what happens in that redevelopment of that space. I was saddened when the proper restaurant closed, and this is, of course, the corner of 5th and Congress, right directly across from Hotel Congress. So when you're thinking of like ground zero, like of an intersection that sort of defines Tucson downtown, like that's it. And the fact that like a well-executed operator that in the group that owned proper out of Flagstaff, that restaurant couldn't make it there was really heartbreaking for me. Because quite frankly, like that's a great location.
Oh, absolutely. But we're also in a really strange area right now. And I don't have to tell anybody listening that prices everywhere have gone up. You even said it right now, especially with food going up. Everything has gone up in price. I mean, we finally got a break from eggs. Thank God. Shout out to everybody that has a breakfast restaurant or serves breakfast. Because for a while there, if you're making an omelet, you're probably losing money for every omelet that you sold. But when prices of everything gone up, and this is one of the things that we kind of took to heart at Stage Left, is like, one, to make sure that the prices are going to be all the time affordable. We're not trying to compete with your $15 cocktail or anything like that. And you're going to be able to come in and have $20 and be able to have a good time. We want to make sure that we're listening to the people, and we want people to come in and have and enjoy themselves.
I love it. Why don't we take a quick break over here, Matt Neely, and hear from some great local sponsors. We'll have one more segment with Mr. Anthony Papps from Stage Left coming up after the break. Don't go anywhere. We are roaming around downtown Tucson this morning on The Morning Voice. I'm lucky enough to have Mr. Anthony Papps from Stage Left, the newest bar immediately adjacent to the right side of Congress. If your audience right, Stage Left, I guess, over there. Welcome back, Anthony.
It's good to be back. Yeah, you're absolutely right. As a matter of fact, when we're talking about doing swag for the bar, we wanted to make sure we said Stage Left and then had an arrow pointing to the right. That way it was just as confusing as possible for anybody that wasn't a theater kid growing up.
I love it, especially after a couple drinks, too. That's got to add to some confusion.
Just a little crisscross just to help people.
So with the relationship with the Rialto, they have their own bar as well, too, that they open up occasionally on the, I guess, stage right side of the Rialto over there called the R Bar. Do you have any relationship business-wise with them, or are they just giving you posters and decor and saying, go with God, my friends, we want there to be more cool stuff on Congress?
Our relationship is definitely the fact that we share a wall with them, and also we're in this beautiful historic building. Our relationship is almost like a... It's not necessary. It is a little bit business wise in the way that we want to take some of the people that are waiting for a show that's going on in the Rialto. Our bar, by the way, excellent bar, super fun. I love the outside. We're trying to be we're open 7 days a week, and then they have like different hours. So I think they're only open Thursday, Friday, Saturday at the moment. I was just there last Saturday, so I apologize if I get that wrong, but. We're trying to be open every day of the week. So, and there's shows Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So, and we try to service those customers, but then also, you know, we're not taking away from our bar, because our bar has like a different, they're more like really cocktail driven, et cetera. And we're a little bit more rock and roll, PBR and a shot of whiskey. Just trying to get something a little bit different.
Sure, sure. And I think that's a great product over there at the R Bar as well, too. And that opens up, of course, during the shows. They create like a sort of causeway across an alleyway and kind of connect the two establishments together. But it's definitely not a 7 day a week experience over there.
No. That alleyway thing, the fact that they could do that is incredible. I mean, I can't imagine the leaps and bounds they had to jump over to get down that street and be able to stretch across the way. But
without a doubt. But I like the idea of places being open 7 days a week, like consistently always having a go-to, knowing it's there. I know in the food service end of things, it almost is imperative to do so, because that way you're turning your product every day. It's fresh, right? Yeah. Your limes that are cut aren't a day old. Your salad isn't a day old. The bread isn't a day old. It's always turning. That seafood delivery came in today versus last Thursday. And it does make a difference in food. Liquor, of course, holds a little better.
Oh, yeah, a lot better.
But it's great to know that there are places consistently staying open and open late as well, too, because that's something I think, particularly when minimum wage escalated to the point that it is now, that you've seen so many businesses turtle up and reduce their hours specifically to, and I get why. I mean, there's a cost-benefit analysis to it, but it just gives us so many less options for our late-night experiences downtown, and we need to have more.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, after COVID and everybody cut their hours, and then again, not to reiterate, but after prices went up and everything else, yeah, everyone cut their hours and you see, you know, cut a lot of personnel, et cetera. And we're trying to kind of go against that current and be one of those places in downtown that you can count on that'll be open when you go to it.
And so your grand opening is this Saturday night?
This Saturday night, yeah.
Is it open to the public, or is this invite only?
No, everyone's invited. Invite only, just everybody's invited. But it's going to be this Saturday. Festivities start at 6. We're going to have a lot of people coming in. We'll have a lot of like giveaways and swag and stuff by all of our local distributors, et cetera. We have a lot of promotions going on. But yeah, it's going to be open to the public. We have a little front patio, which is really cool, which actually, if you'd been by the space before, when it was Good Oak Bar, they didn't quite have. We actually have an extension out in front, so you can actually sit out front and have a cocktail as well, which is really nice, so you can be outside. But yeah, anytime after 4 o'clock on Saturday, come on in. I'll be there the whole time.
I consider myself warned.
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to warn you. I'm a pretty good time.
I love it. I can confirm the accuracy of that statement as well, too. We've only got a moment left over here for our listeners. Why don't you break down again where you're located, what your social medias are, hours, the whole nine yards of the new Stage Left Bar.
Absolutely. So again, we are truly Stage Left of the Rialto. We share the wall. So if you're looking from the street, we are just to the right of the Rialto. Our Instagram is Stage Left Congress. And then our Facebook is also the same thing. We're open 7 days a week, 4 p.m. to 2 a.m. Just beyond our grand opening, you can count on us to be there. We're hoping to be another staple of downtown that is going to be there when you need a place to go at Monday at 1 a.m. or a Friday and you want to start your walking down the street and having a good time. We're hoping to be one of those places that you're always welcome to come in, just hang out.
Love it. Looking forward to your grand opening this Saturday. Thank you, Mr. Anthony Papp, from Stage Left. We appreciate you taking time out of your Wednesday morning. You had an early start over here for Bar Guys as well, too. But yeah, thanks for taking part of your Wednesday morning to join us on The Morning Voice.
Absolutely. So happy to be here. Go Wildcats.
Yeah, absolutely. Great week. Don't go anywhere. We've got an exciting another hour of The Morning Voice coming up. We're going to have restaurant opening and closings, and then we're going to have State Treasurer Kimberly Yee coming up in middle of hour two. You're listening to Grant Kruger on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Good morning and welcome back to hour two of The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, as always excited to be with you on Wednesday morning, 7 to 9 a.m., where we get to talk about local business development, just a little dose of politics over there, perhaps, and just cool things happening in the city of Tucson. As we talked about at the beginning of the hour, last week was pretty much the busiest week, the busiest day of the restaurants and bar year in Blackout Wednesday, a tremendous success. And so anybody selling alcohol probably had a really whopper of a night because everybody had the night off or the day off the next day. And so it was a tremendously smashing night for the industry. And in general, this whole month coming up is just going to be great. You're going to actually have to be a little bit patient in local restaurants and bars over just the next couple of weeks. Leading up to 2 weeks from now, which is U of A's winter graduation week and kind of corporate holiday parties all colliding at just about the exact same time of the year. Nobody wants their corporate holiday party on November 30th, but they also don't want it on December 22nd or 3rd either. It generally fits into the first or second week of December. And as such, you're going to see local bars and restaurants having an awful lot of private parties. And with limited capacity with this colder weather, as Matt was saying, it also reduces our table availability. So be patient over the next couple of weeks in all of your local establishments as you experience that one. We're all trying to spread some holiday cheer for everybody out there and make your holidays just a better place. It's one of our favorite times of the year to serve everyone. You know, people tend to be in a good mood. You know, they're jovial. An extra adult beverage may or may not be had. And these things are all great. So just have a little bit of patience with your local restaurants and servers over just the next couple of weeks as we kind of reach this peak part of winter high season. We did get notified that a new restaurant will be popping up in Oro Valley at 11695 North Oracle. This is the shopping center area where the In-N-Out Burger is, just south of the Oro Valley Marketplace. They're getting a Happy Joe's restaurant, is announced. The Iowa-based chain of pizza and ice cream parlors that have this sort of experiential video game golf simulator thing going on with them. Big footprints for Happy Joe's. And they're announcing their first Tucson outpost is going to come to 11695 North Oracle. They said sometime in 2026. As we know, restaurant openings can be a little squirrely. My guess will be if they're building a brand new building from scratch, this will be at the end of 2026. Maybe even early 2027. But either way, Happy Joe's coming to the Oro Valley Marketplace area. And I'm excited to see more concepts pop up in that shopping center that's been economically challenged for literally the last 20 some odd years. There are pads that to this day have never been occupied. There are truly like spaces inside of the mall portion of that that haven't had a tenant in 20 years. And so it's really great to see some new things moving in. Even if it is a chain, we'll take what we can get up in that neck of the woods in Oro Valley right now. On the non-chain front, what's opening up is the new Huero Canelos has opened up, right? They had done a significant remodel, brand new building, having demolished the old one back in July that we announced. And so they've opened up in just the last couple weeks in a rebirth of their original location. I always like to give restaurants a few weeks to kind of get their stuff together before I go visit and pile on, as it often can be a little choppy for even the most experienced operators, but needless to say, they've got open again at 5201 South 12th Avenue. That's the OG Huero Canelo reborn, the phoenix rising from the ashes, wishing Mr. Daniel Contreras a tremendous amount of success in that one. He's been a longtime staple of the food scene in Southern Arizona, and so him bringing a new face to Huero Canelo, I think, is a big deal in Tucson. And so that's pretty neat and glad to see that one happening. I was driving down the street the other day looking at the construction of the new Shake Shack. And that building is nearly done. This is Campbell and Fort Lowell area on the west side. And I noticed Like, the construction team had all their generators hanging from a giant crane suspended in the air on that job site, lest they all be stolen.
Why might that be, Grant?
I'm not sure. I thought perhaps it was to show off how nice their generators were to the traffic on Campbell, like that they were really proud of their Sunbelt rental equipment, or perhaps this was some sort of advertising, or perhaps it had something to do with the continued downtroddenness of the Fort Lowell area and how that street just continues to foster large amounts of crime, and these were clearly being protected. And when I stopped and pulled over to take a look at this, I saw a sign on the Jack in the Box there that that Jack in the Box is going out of business as of December 8th. And so that's coming up basically a week from yesterday. They're going to be closing up shop. Now, part of it could be Shake Shack taking some of their business, but you don't see fast food chains like that close all that regularly. And I guess they're closing a couple more stores in Tucson on my research as well, too. So Jack in the Box doing somewhat of a retraction here in the Old Pueblo. So do take a look out for that one if you're still into the two tacos for 99 cents. That's kind of like the Arizona iced tea of food that it's been, you know, two tacos for a buck for a long time. I'm guessing that's not a profitable venture in today's market either. Riley's Pizza announced that they're downtown, that they're bringing back their lunch service at least 4 days a week. And I wouldn't talk about a place doing a lunch service as newsworthy, so to say, but as we're looking at opening a new restaurant downtown, I'm amazed at how many places aren't open for lunch, either at all or perhaps only on the weekends, making me wonder about the viability of lunch in the Old Pueblo. Of course, the establishments that are within the orbit of the court system seem to be doing okay. If you're Street Taco and Beer, you're Baggins, right? You're in that like circle of jury duty, let's call it. Like, those guys have business. But if you're full service, just down the street, anything further, let's call it east than, say, the Monica, like, they don't seem to be getting an awful lot of foot traffic, and there doesn't seem to be a lot of lunch service being offered. So I'm excited to see Riley's bringing back their lunch Thursday through Sunday, not Monday through Wednesday right now. And they haven't done that since pre-COVID. And so it's nice to see that one starting to pop back up. So do go check out those guys. It's the former Riley Funeral Home across the street from La Chingada, what used to be Cafe Pocacosa, for those keeping score at home. And so do go check out those guys over there as well. Still more and more bad news coming from the Tucson baseball team, Matt. Like, I am just pessimistic that we're going to get a home game at all this season right now. Have you heard anything new on that one?
Nothing new. I did get I'm on their email list, so I get their little news updates, which I appreciate. But no, I haven't seen anything in terms of any announcement of passport issues being resolved. Again, if they have access to a decent immigration lawyer, I think you could realistically, you know, make the argument that they could come back for the last one or two weekends homestands and call that an exhibition, which they do have passport clearance for, right? And that would be within the letter and spirit of that law, of that passport regulation, whatever that category of passport that they do have, and maybe salvage a couple of homestands to whet people's appetite. As you say, the evenings are cooler now. You know, you're getting, people are more into maybe holiday Christmas parties and Christmas shopping and kind of holiday activities than they are to baseball. So maybe they're doing the geometry, the math of all that stuff and seeing that, you know, even if we could pull that off, it may not be a great thing. But, you know, certainly if I was them, I'd be at least exploring that option.
I think so as well, too. Being an exhibition, much like the Mexican Baseball Fiesta,
precisely,
which clearly had a visa that was designed for a temporary stay in the United States for these players, you would think you could be able to get a weekend or two out of that. I understand the logic of the entirety of the season needing a different visa, but if you can do it for the Mexican Baseball Fiesta for one weekend, why can't you have another Mexican Baseball Fiesta? And how many fiestas can you have per year before there's a limitation on this, a moratorium on baseball fiestas? I'm not so sure, but I'm really disheartened to see that we haven't had any games yet this season out of that one, and so that's a real bummer. Going back to downtown, it looks like the ice rink finally popped up open as of December 1st. It took a while. There was a couple delays over there, equipment failures galore, as it turns out when it's 71 degrees in the middle of the day, it's tough to have ice continue to work outside, but they opened up as of yesterday. So for $22, you can go out and reserve yourself a pair of skates and do outdoor figure skating from now until the end of the holiday season. he's in downtown Tucson. So do go check that out. It's right in front of the TCC over there.
And if I'm the city, I am really nervous about all those copper cooling tubes, you know, being out in the open 24/7 for like 6 weeks.
Yeah,
the way copper gets stolen around this place.
I'm wondering if they're going to have to get a crane and suspend those things up in the air as well, too. Maybe the entire ice rink hangs up top, you know?
Like I'm going to invest in crane futures.
Yeah,
on the off. Protect things from being stolen.
Oh, unfortunate, but sadly true. But I'm excited that we at least got that one going over here, that this tradition that we've been doing in downtown Tucson for some time is starting to gain a bit of a footing over here as well, too. So you get a chance over the next couple of weeks when the Ice Cats, the Tucson Roadrunners have a home stint over there. You could bring your own skates either before or after and go check that one out, which would be pretty awesome to see. Got to go to a Roadrunners game this weekend, and we lost to the evil Abbotsford Canucks. Unfortunately, there was a home stand on both Friday at 3 p.m., which is kind of neat to have a 3 p.m. game, and then a 7 p.m. game on Saturday. And so nice to see a good crowd out there for the Roadrunners, giving us hope that we'll also be able to get good crowds for the Tucson Sugar Schools, whose season starts up in late March, and March 29th is going to be that particular home opener as well, too. And then, of course, in March, we get our golf tournament, the Conquistadors. We're putting on the Colo Guard Classic. We're doing a concert at the Rito Downs on Friday, March 20th. It's now been announced not only is Lady A going to be the headliner on that one, that the country band Parmalee will open up for them as well, too. So that's a pretty nice country 1-2 punch, and that's coming up on Friday, March 20th. So lots of cool things going on in the Old Pueblo. This is certainly our high season, so do have some patience out there for your local bars and restaurants. Why don't we take one more quick break? When we come back, Matt and I are going to talk about some of the Project Blue shenanigans going on with the city of Tucson, and then we're going to have Arizona State Treasurer Kimberly Yee coming up at the half hour as well, too. Don't go anywhere. Lots of informative and exciting talk on The Morning Voice, 10:30 a.m., your home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger. Hey, so it was at the top of the news this morning that Amazon pulling out of Project Blue, Matt. And this was something that had really drawn a lot of public interest, a lot of ire. Data centers happening here in southern Arizona. Are we for this? Are we against it? The city went out and made quite a spectacle out of themselves in rejecting the annexation from Beale Industries of this 290 acres that they've contractually agreed to buy from Pima County. Pima County still has to sell this land to Beale. Beale can choose any partner they want as an end user, right?
Correct.
So Amazon was just one of the potential suitors they had over here. And it looks like Amazon leaving isn't going to actually change anything for the path of this data center, no?
Correct. It's very interesting development. I mean, you know, after the community rolled out the red carpet for them, the welcome wagon, how could they not come here, you know? But it sounds like it is going to come. I regardless of who the operator is. And what I found very interesting was Councilman Cunningham talking about, I got to get the exact quote, but I think he said he accused Beale of credibility. He says Beale has credibility issues. And so again, I'm not privy to what Councilmember Cunningham sees and conversations that he has had behind the scenes and the facts that he knows. But I think that's, to me, it's a little bit of a red flag where you have a sitting council member going after a business that's trying to build something that's going to create jobs and help the economy here.
No, it's certainly scary times and a bad look for the city to present this negative anti-business influence on such an important developer. Now, I'm not 100% for all data centers. I don't think that they should just be able to be built unmitigated. Certainly their power and or potential water usage is very high. And it is something we have to consider as a community. And there were over 500 letters written to the Arizona Corporation Commission against the vote that I believe is happening happening today, where they're voting on whether or not to get to sell a power hookup, right, to this mm-hmm. data center and what that cost might be. And so it's going to be really interesting to see who and how they can get this across the finish line. The city, of course, voted 7-0 unanimously to prevent the annexation and the potential water line hookup to Tucson sure. Water for this. And it's something that the city almost always seems to do is vote unanimously for something. I did notice yesterday, however, they had a vote for something that we like to call vice mayor. Now, people don't necessarily pay attention who the vice mayor is in the city of Tucson, but last year it was Lane Santa Cruz. And when they voted this year to do it and who was going to be the vice mayor, they've often rotated them. But Lane Santa Cruz was voted in a 4-3 vote to be vice mayor yesterday. Right. And I found that interesting that that wasn't 7-0. There's a little chink in the armor there about who and where may be the number two in the absence of mm-hmm. our mayor. Our mayor, of course, in the city of Tucson doesn't really have veto powers like a president or a governor might. I think a lot of people have a misconception mm-hmm. that there's more power than the mayor truly has, quite frankly. The mayor's seat is really more nothing more than a city council vote, not dismissing it here. It's a powerful position and working for permits out there, mayor. So, you know, gotta be careful with what I say. But it's really more of a seventh city council seat that sits, you know, in with the whole city voting for them. Not that the other six don't have that anyway. But it doesn't have any veto power, and so they get to vote for over who their vice mayor is going to be. And this one was 4-3 with, of course, the existing mayor, Lane, voting for herself, and the two new city council candidates joining with the mayor and vice mayor. And so Miranda Schubert and Selena Barajas voted for her, and the other three did not.
Immediately shows the new power dynamic on the council. Because you know, the mayor endorsed Barajas and Schubert, right, in their races. So they were her picked, you know, her preferred candidates. And I don't know, I'm not speaking for the veracity of it, but I saw online that there was two votes for vice mayor, and the first one was 3-3. Or maybe the vote is when the mayor had to come in, because that's the only time she, I think, votes is to break a deadlock. So to your point, the mayor had to kind of come out on this issue and between Paul Cunningham and Lane Santa Cruz, the vice mayorship went to Lane Santa Cruz.
And so you can see, I think this is the canary in the coal mine on where that power structure lies inside of the city.
When the
council.
Rubber meets the road, right? When you really have to break a deadlock, the mayor had to come out and say which side she was on.
And at that point, if you have four votes, like, you've got everything you need to do in the city of Tucson. You don't need the other three to pass any sort of
Correct.
Policy you want to do. And so my gut feeling says we're staring down the barrel of now an even further left of center city council. And this vote showed it right there, mm-hmm. where with these two new mayor endorsed city council candidates being victorious in their election, being certified and basically, you know, anointed yesterday as our new city council members, they are in, if they weren't in complete control of everything, they certainly are now. And it is something to look out for. Obviously, the city is out at this point on this particular project, and it kind of ties back to the county now on Project Blue. And can the county get out of this real estate deal in any way, shape, or form? Because if they could go back on their vote right now, I think they would. It was a 3-2 vote
right.
to sell that 290 acres to Beal, and they're looking like they're pretty sorry that they did that at this point. And I think it would go 3-2 in the other direction if we had to vote today, but they can't get out of that contract with Beal. Beal had the opportunity to bail, the option to walk from that deal should the annexation not work, not the requirement that the deal is dead if the annexation didn't work. And I think the county really either misinterpreted or misunderstood that particular decision, because I think a lot of pundits thought this deal was dead when the city chose not to annex. And quite frankly, it's looking like this thing is moving forward full steam, regardless of the city participating, and now regardless of Amazon Web Services participating. And it looks like we're just going to get Meta, good old Zuckerberg, right?
Yeah. The interesting thing is, and let's turn our gaze over to HUD Bay and see what the county's doing to HUD Bay. They're doing the dust road, the dirt road and dust mitigation and all these things. And they going to pass an ordinance that limits the number of trips that HUD Bay can make, which basically puts a chokehold on how much ore they can send out of the mine. So the county has a very deep list of plays that it can run against anybody it doesn't want operating here. And I think the folks at Amazon probably see what the county is. They're pulling out all the stops on HUD Bay. They know that the county has a lot of tools in their toolbox that can go against them. The other thing is this whole concept of a mordida, some sort of a payoff. We need to get a payoff. The payoff is jobs, I would think, and tax revenues, a significant amount of tax revenues that are going to come out of this when it's built. The city said, we don't want those tax revenues, you know, whatever, that's their business. But this whole idea of one supervisor complaining, well, you were going to build a $100 million reclaimed water pipeline for the city, yet you're only going to give us $15 million in payoff. You know, you're going to pay for some education or whatever, do some educational STEM training or whatever. You're going to pay off. Well, you were going to give them 100. We want 100, you know.
No, it's unfortunate to think that, you know, it's just a what's in it for us attitude.
Sure.
When the what's in it for us, of course, is the economic development part, right? It's the construction. It's all the jobs that are created there. It's the jobs that happen in these data centers as well, too. Beggars can't be choosers. This would be one thing if, like, we just had so many offers for this land that it could have been insert something better, right? A shopping center, a new housing development, some amazing company building their company headquarters in some capacity. And I don't seemingly see that happening here. Like, we don't have a lot of takers for this particular space on that south side of Tucson, in the area where the Pima County Fairgrounds and prisons and whatnot are. Like, this isn't exactly the economic heart of Southern Arizona in any capacity. And we're going to have to really figure out what we're going to do with that space if we don't end up getting jobs like this.
I mean, the Formula One track didn't happen, right? I mean, all these, you know, glorious things. We've already got a velodrome, so we don't need to. The other thing is, we had Leah Marquez Peterson on a couple of weeks ago with Ted, and, you know, I kind of asked her, what is she hearing about public outcry at the data centers in Pinal County? She really didn't have an answer. She didn't know that there was this same kind of visceral outrage to the multiple data centers that are planned in Pinal County. And I think maybe one of these days we get a Pinal County official on, or we just scour the news and see what kind of pushback they're getting from the community. I bet you it seems like, since it hasn't made the news down here, it's different than what we got here.
Challenge accepted, Matt Neely. I'll find us somebody from Pinal County in the next few weeks, and we'll talk about that one. But we do love to keep things local and as Tucson-focused as we can, of course, on The Morning Voice. But we're going to have the honor of having our state treasurer coming up next, Miss Kimberly Yee. She's got a little election coming up later in 2026. We're going to talk about the state of Arizona, a little bit about that election, and all kinds of awesome things coming up on The Morning Voice. Don't go anywhere. You're listening to Grant Kruger on 1030 AM. You're home for local news and talk. Welcome back to The Morning Voice. I am your host, Grant Kruger, and this morning we are lucky enough to have calling in the state treasurer of Arizona, Mrs. Kimberly Yee. Good morning, Kimberly.
Good morning, Grant. Thank you for having me.
Hey, thanks for spending part of your Wednesday with us here on The Morning Voice in Tucson. We're excited to have you as part of our show.
I appreciate it. Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Hey, well, for our listeners that maybe don't know you as well, why don't you give a little background about your electoral history over here? You've been an elected official in the state of Arizona for some time over here. And in the last election in 2022, you got more votes than just about any candidate in the history of the state of Arizona.
I did. I received over 103,000 more votes than Katie Hobbs, who is our current governor, in the last 2022 election on a statewide ballot. So, yes, it was truly an honor to see the support. And again, I think it's based on performance. I have been honored to serve not only in the state legislature in my Northwest Phoenix district, and I served in 2010. I was the first a female Asian woman to ever be elected in our state's history, interestingly. And I served on many committees. I have a background in public policy. So even before running for the legislature, I've served for two Republican governors and a former state treasurer of Arizona 20 years ago named Dean Martin. So all of that history and that background really prepared me to be in the legislature, to be able to navigate the laws and really bring people together, focus on conservative policies, making sure we have lower taxes, decreased regulations for our businesses, and, you know, coming from a background of my family, we're business owners. And we started our family business back in the 1930s in Arizona. My grandparents ran a little grocery store in South Phoenix. And it was, again, back in the 1930s, my grandparents named the grocery store New State Market. Why? Because Arizona was a new state back in the 1930s, and it was certainly their new state to build their family of nine children, believe it or not, who worked every single hand in that little grocery. It stood there successfully for 63 years. So I brought with me that family business background to not only these positions where you talk about how we can continue to advance our economy, bring more jobs, workforce development, great schools, all of those come together. And so really was an honor to serve as the Republican majority leader in the state Senate, and had the honor of actually bringing Sandra Day O'Connor. Justice O'Connor was my guest in 2017. She was the first female majority leader in the country, obviously here in Arizona. And so I was the second female majority leader in Arizona. So she and I had a conversation on the floor of the state Senate before everyone would come in to vote. And I asked her, Justice O'Connor, what was it like when you served 44 years ago in this very chamber at this very desk? And she said, well, take a look around. You have Democrats decorate with the donkeys on their desks, and the Republicans, they decorate with the elephants. She said back in the day, they didn't do any of that. They didn't even know the party affiliations of the colleagues with whom they would serve. They just went to work to get the good work done for the people of Arizona, focused on the policies, not the politics. And I just truly admired those words of wisdom. I take that everywhere in my speeches. I, again, had the privilege of serving as your state treasurer for these last 7 years. I'm going on my eighth year next year. And now I'm running for state superintendent of public instruction in the next campaign.
Well, you've done a great job as treasurer, not only like getting more votes than anybody in the history of Arizona, but you've done some great fights against DEI, BDS, ESG, and the entire woke alphabet soup that's out there. Can you tell us a few examples of things you've helped fix here in Arizona?
Thank you. Yes. Well, we really have fought against the woke culture, and you wouldn't think that would happen out of a state treasurer's office, but there are so many opportunities when you look at what is happening around the entire country, especially under that Biden administration. We fought against not only the DEI policies. I mean, I put a bill in the legislature last year that said, you know, while Katie Hobbs is managing all of these state agencies, I run my own state agency, the state treasurer's office. And we don't do DEI in hiring and promoting and training. We do it based on the old-fashioned way of experience and what you bring to that job. And so I put a bill through that said all state agencies have to do the same. And so that was one on the example of DEI, but we've also fought ESG and, you know, the environmental and social governance types of laws. What was happening there was that Biden had his John Kerry was his, you know, person on all of the ESG-related legislation. And they were basically doing conversations with banks across the country saying, you have to debank or not provide loans or management of money to those who are on oil and gas. And that's just not the free American marketplace. And so I fought against that effort. And I said, you know, we really have to get back to the free market policies. You cannot pick winners and losers. And in that case, they were picking the losers as oil and gas because it opposed, you know, their ESG policies. And so I wrote letters to our banking partners and I said, if you're going to go down this path of only ESG related policies, we won't bank with you. And on the BDS front, that's boycott, divestments, and sanctions. That is really a law that we put in place in 2016, I was in the state legislature, and it said we don't do business with those companies that boycott our friend and ally in Israel. And so when we saw in 2021 that Ben and Jerry's was clearly boycotting the sale of ice cream in Judea and Samaria in Israel, we sent them a letter. I wrote the letter. I said, you've got two options here. This was to their parent company, Unilever. Either divest your relationship with Ben and Jerry's or go back and sell ice cream in Israel. And they chose to do neither. So I divested $143 million from Arizona funds away from Unilever and Ben and Jerry's. We were the first state to do so. And that was a divestment that was significant because many states followed in the same 2 weeks. And we were the leader on that effort. It was amazing because They lost so many millions of dollars all in short order because of the finance officers of these various states around the country. But the good news on that story is that a little less than a year later, Unilever called me and said, Treasurer Yi, would you be interested in doing business with us again? We have gone back, as you recommended, to sell ice cream. They sold their manufacturing to an Israeli-based company to sell ice cream, and so there was no longer a boycott. And I shared with them, thank you for the information and for your effort. However, you're still doing business with Ben & Jerry's domestically, so we'll wait and see. So we have not yet rearranged that, relationship with Unilever, not quite yet until they fully divest from Ben & Jerry's.
Well, Treasurer Yi, you've done a great job with the $64 billion, billion with a B, state budget and managing over $15 billion in assets that the state has under management as well, too. But you're going to term out, right? You can only be treasurer for two terms, if I understand correctly. And so you've got a new race coming up in 2026. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the superintendent of public instruction and what needs to be done there?
Well, just to go back quickly on that $15.4 billion, that's where we started in 2019 in January on day one of my administration. We are now at $32 billion in assets under management. So it's about 108% increase in the time I have served as treasurer. Those are monies that, again, are invested in our office, but it goes back to the taxpayers of Arizona. And I get calls around the entire state saying, because we've invested so well in these dollars, that they're decreasing their taxes. So that's just good news on the front of the state treasurer's office. And I, you know, I would love to stay longer, but term limits require me to serve only 8 years. And so I have gone back to really where I began, which was for 12 years, I worked exclusively on K through 12 public school related education policies. And when I shared earlier that I had the privilege of working for a couple of Republican governors, and I worked for as a staff member of the State Senate Education Committee back in the 90s, we were establishing what we know as school choice in Arizona, which has been replicated around the entire country because of our great model schools here, not only with charter schools, but being able to have open enrollment so you can send your child to a school of their choice outside of your residential zip code. What a concept, right? It's called freedom of education, and it allows parents to make those decisions, not the government. And so I was privileged to be a young staffer, a good number of years, over a decade, where we were establishing these conversations on what school choice looked like in Arizona. And charter schools began where you really have the innovative approach of having an amazing school that is still taxpayer paid, but it looks different from the traditional government district school, because they can, for instance, save a lot of money by going to Costco or Office Max for their supplies and get them at half the price, whereas a school district sometimes is bound to a warehouse with, you know, higher than normal prices. And then these schools have really hit the map, because if you look at U.S. News and World Report on a national level, annually, Arizona charter schools are making the mark. They oftentimes hit that the top 10%. Many of ours, Tucson was specifically mentioned in their charter schools. And I have personally visited a number of Tucson and Southern Arizona related charter schools. They are outstanding, not only here in Arizona, but other states are modeling their charter schools exactly after the ones we have based here in our state.
School choice.
What we want to do is, yes.
Oh, go ahead.
School choice, yes, school choice has to be protected. And so that really is going to be a conversation in this next coming campaign, because we have to protect it. And the Democrats, they hate it. Why? Because the parents are leaving, the schools that they were trapped in, and they're leaving for schools of choice. And again, they can't control them when they do that, but they're trying to lock in regulations and other types of policies so that we no longer have the school choice we know and love today.
Without a doubt, school choice is going to be such an important issue coming up on this election in 2026, which is now only 11 months away. Go figure. And yours is going to be sooner, because we've got a primary coming up. And let's take one quick commercial break, and we'll talk about that primary and ways that our listeners can also engage with current Arizona State Treasurer, Ms. Kimberly Yi. Don't go anywhere. More fascinating conversation with Grant and Treasurer Yi coming up after the break. Welcome back to one final segment of The Morning Voice this Wednesday, December 2nd. And we're lucky enough to have the highest ranking Republican elected official in the state of Arizona, State Treasurer Miss Kimberly Yee, joining us. Welcome back, Kimberly.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for coming on. So before the break, we were talking about a primary election coming up over here. You're going to be running for Superintendent of Public Instruction. And I was looking up for some polling to see where we might be standing right now. And looking at the Civic Lens Research poll right now, it's showing you with a significant lead over incumbent Tom Horn. You've got 21.9% of the confirmed vote. He's got 18.3%, but there's 59.8% not sure or undecided. What are you going to do to get and capture those voters out there?
Well, we've talked to so many Arizonans across the state, and they are ready for a change. I mean, we should not be content with what is going on in our Arizona schools. And we are seeing significant data that shows that. You know, we are only at a 25% proficiency in reading and math. This is in fourth grade and eighth grade markers, and they compare that nationally. This is not acceptable. So we've got to go back and focus on, you know, phonics-based instruction for reading and the old-fashioned way of math. I believe in the old schoolhouse approach. If it doesn't, so many of these changes are happening because of woke classroom curriculum, and they're focusing on things that don't matter. We just need to get back to the basics, reading and math, understanding the concept of basic life skills. I believe strongly in bringing back home economics. You know, home ec was great, you know, for learning about personal finance, for instance, and making sure you know how to manage your money as an individual before you get out into the real world. I'm a big proponent of financial literacy. And that's when you learned it, is in home ec. Let's bring back the shop classes.
I love that love that idea. Vocational training is very important. Learning how to, quote unquote, balance a checkbook, how finances work, managing your credit. Financial literacy seems to be something we don't even teach to our youth. It's almost like we don't want to, so that they can get in trouble early.
It's true. It's sad. And many of the families are just not focusing on that at home. So if we have an opportunity, you know, in our classrooms when they're young, and make it fun and engaging. You know, one of the things that I like to talk about with kids across the entire state is just fun and a concept of learning saving, being able to work for your money, understanding that chores can help you see the worth and the value of making that dollar. And so once they earn that money for themselves, they have to think clearly about what they want to do with it. Do they want to save it? Do they want to spend it? Make sure they spend it wisely. And I always talk about good stewardship of our money, because really you can give that money back to a charity, a church, you know, wherever there might be a need. And many kids don't understand that third concept of good stewardship of money.
Without a doubt. So I see you've been endorsed by four former state superintendents. You've also got the endorsement of Turning Point USA over there. It looks like you're really gaining a lot of strength. Am I missing some big endorsements over here?
Well, you know, it's wonderful to talk to, because in my opinion, all of those endorsements are really strong. But the endorsement of the parents who actually are invested in these schools are so meaningful. When I have conversations with them and they say, you know, that they are just choosing another alternative because what's happening in their classroom is just not acceptable. That's probably why we have one of the highest rates of homeschooling in Arizona, because people just are not getting what they want at their traditional public school. But we have to fix those public schools. If they are not working, we as taxpayers need to make sure that we need to get them back on track. And so the state superintendent of public instruction is the lead education person in the state who will have that role. And the current state superintendent is not getting it done. And so that's the reason why you see those four former state superintendents, Lisa Graham Keegan, Jaime Malera, John Hoopentaugh, Diane Douglas. They didn't have to come out publicly, you know, to support the primary candidate for this position, especially as I am running against an incumbent. But they did. And I'm so glad that they did, because they want to show voters of Arizona that it's time to make a change in this very important office for state superintendent.
Without a doubt. So our listeners have got a unique opportunity. This Friday, we've got a little event going on with you in Tucson, Arizona. You're going to be here at Reforma Modern Mexican Restaurant, 11:30 in the morning. And we're excited to have you.
Yes, and I hear that this wonderful restaurant, Reforma, is going to be a great location. Do you know anything about the place?
Well, just a little bit over there. Here it's great, you know. I've got to leave it a great review over there on Google and Yelp. No, but it's a great opportunity to come meet our current state treasurer. It's 11:30 in the morning this upcoming Friday. Where else can our listeners engage with Kimberly Yee? Where can we find your websites and socials to engage with you?
Yes, please visit my website at KimberlyYee.com. And there, I encourage you to take a look at my background and experience for this position. But also, more importantly, if you haven't signed my online petition, this allows me to get my name on the ballot. I need over 7,000 signatures around the state. But also, please feel free to make a small donation to the campaign. I have to get this message out across this big state. And any donation counts. And so I just appreciate your time. Follow me on social media at Kimberly Yee AZ.
I love it. Thank you so much, State Treasurer, Mrs. Kimberly Yee. Thank you for spending part of your Wednesday morning with us.
It's my pleasure. Have a great day.
And listeners, thank you for spending your Wednesday with us. It's always a pleasure to have you on The Morning Voice, local news and talk, 10:30 a.m. Looking forward to having you guys next week. And come see State Treasurer Kimberly Yee, 11:30 in the morning on Friday. If you're up to it, it's a great opportunity to meet some of our great electeds. Have a great day, and looking forward to seeing you next week.